To get an understanding of the science I'm going to talk about, it is necessary for us to go back to my introduction into advanced research. Well, I got first interested in cells when I was 7 years old and saw cells for the first time in a microscope. I didn't realize that that initial event that mesmerized me would lead me into my career. Years later, I found myself as a graduate student in biology at the University of Virginia. And in 1968, I had the wonderful opportunity of learning how to culture stem cells from my master. His name is Erwin Koenigsberg. Erv Koenigsberg was the first scientist to create the conditions of cloning stem cells, and this was way back in 1968. I bring that up because today we talk about stem cells as if there's something brand new that just came off the press, and yet I was working on stem cells almost 40 years ago. And it was during those days when Erv was teaching me how to culture these cells that I found my first important lesson that later led to the unfolding of an amazing understanding about cells. This lesson was offered by Erv when I was culturing my first set of cells and was about to put the cells into the incubator. As I was carrying the petri dishes over to the incubator and I was about to put them in, Erv said to me, he said, "Bruce, tomorrow morning when you come in and look at these cells, what I want you to recognize is this. If the cells don't look good, if they don't look healthy, I don't want you to tamper with the cells. I want you to first look at the conditions of the environment." Because over the years, Erv found that it was environmental conditions that seemed to impact the health and fate of the cells in his tissue culture. So I started culturing these cells. And after I finished my PhD and did a postdoc at the University of Texas, I ended up at the University of Wisconsin where I continued my research on cloned human cells and animal cells. And it was there at the university, as I started to carry out experiments on these stem cells, that I started to realize something very interesting about Erv's admonition about the environment influencing cells. Because as I started to change the environment of the cultures, with very specific references to the components in that culture medium and the conditions of the incubator, I started to realize that I greatly influenced the fate of the cells that I was growing. So, for example, in my experiments, I'd start off with a culture of cells and isolate a single cell, a progenitor cell called a myoblast. A myoblast is a stem cell that, when activated, normally provides for muscle. All of us right now have myoblasts in our bodies. I don't care what age you are sitting with these embryonic-like cells interspersed among your muscle tissue. So if you start to exercise a lot and you need to increase your muscle mass, you will actually activate these myoblasts to create a larger population and then contribute to the mass of the muscle that you're exercising. If you damage your muscle, the myoblasts are the stem cells that will actually repair the damage and bring the muscle back into its normal situation. So the interesting thing was that I'm working with these identifiable cells, and I would isolate these cells, put them into cultures by themselves, and from a single cell grow a large colony of cells. All these cells were isogenous, meaning their genes were all exactly the same because they all came from the same parent cell. So these were genetically identical cells. What I found was this. If I take one set of cells and put them into an environment with the standard conditions that I'd been using, of course they form muscle, and the cells actually would form mature muscles that would actually contract in the petri dish. However, if I took cells from the same community, genetically identical cells, and put them into a second environment with different conditions, the cells didn't form muscle, but in fact form bone. And then again, if I took cells from the same original culture and put them into a third petri dish with yet a different set of conditions, these cells would form fat. And at some point, I started to realize, while I was teaching medical students at the same time the understanding of the central dogma that genes control life, that DNA goes to RNA goes to protein, and the character of life is controlled and regulated by the DNA, my cells were giving me another insight into the world of life. My cells started to reveal to me that their fate wasn't really determined by their genes, for the fact was all the cells and all the experiments were genetically identical. But the fate of the cells was really more or less connected to the environment, that whatever the environmental conditions are, they were involved with the selection of the genes that ultimately led to the fate of the cells. So the question was, what was really going on in my cultures? As I tried to get my colleagues to understand this work, which was published in a number of different journals, I found that the reception of this work was not very interesting to them, for they were very much preoccupied with tooling up for the concept of the Human Genome Project that was unfolding at that time. That this kind of work that I was involved with was really, more or less, it must be an exception. And we really don't have time to deal with your exceptions, Bruce. So they sort of dismissed my work. And yet, I realized as a scientist that the work was repeatable, predictable, it's been published, it's been reviewed by my peers, and accepted as a scientific piece of laboratory research. So at some point, I felt I was a little bit out of integrity because I was getting lessons about life from the cells in the tissue culture that did not in any way correspond to the information that I was providing medical students about how life worked. And as a result of that, I found that it was very, very necessary to not be in that environment. And in fact, I actually resigned my tenured position at the university because I found that I was just not in integrity staying there teaching what I knew to be wrong. And so on my own, I started to continue my studies as to what is it that was going on in my culture? What could I learn from these stem cells? What could I find out about how life is controlled by looking at them rather than just falling into the dogma that everyone else was blindly following? So I started to try to look into the character of what actually life is all about. I already had some very basic fundamental information. As I told you, the body, the cells are made out of proteins. 100,000 different kinds of proteins. The proteins are the building blocks that give us our physical structure and give us our behavioral attributes. What's interesting about the proteins is that proteins are linear molecules like threads, and that when the molecule is synthesized, the protein folds up into complex shapes. The final folding shape of a protein is actually a reflection of the balancing of the positive and negative charges along the length of this filament called a protein macromolecule. And so that the protein would fold itself up in such a way as to balance all of the charges and provide a very stable shape. And these shapes were the shapes that gave rise to the structures of the cell, so that they were indeed like physical building blocks, just like bricks building a building. However, as I mentioned, proteins are the unique molecules because proteins can change shape. And when a protein changes shape, the shape change actually reflects movement. The movement created by a protein as it's changing from shape A to shape B, or in actual biochemical terms, as it changes from conformation A to conformation B, the movement that results is actually harnessed by the cell to carry out functions. So the building blocks start to move, and the movement is used to create the characters of physiology. Protein movements provide for digestion. Protein movements provide for respiration. Protein movements provide for muscle contraction. So all of a sudden, we start to see how the static building blocks become dynamic, and in their dynamic character, create the character of life. It's interesting just to reflect on this very simple fact. A human cadaver looks exactly like a human because it still has all the proteins. It has the structural, physical configuration of a protein machine shaped like a human, but it doesn't express life. And then I'd have to say, so what is life? What is different between the cadaver and a living thing? And the answer is movement. And then all of a sudden we say, yeah, but movement comes from the proteins changing shape. So if you really want to understand the nature of life, then you'd have to ask the question is, what is it that causes a protein to move or change shape? Because if you would understand what that is, then you can start to regulate or control the movement of proteins.